You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. President Donald Trump has delivered on a key campaign promise to ramp up immigration enforcement. Following his first year in office, the nonprofit American Immigration Council has found the number of people in detention by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, it's increased by 75%. And the number of at-large arrests, ones that occur inside the community as opposed to the border, are up by 600%. According to a new analysis of data by EdSource, a nonprofit newsroom that focuses on education in California, those increases can also be seen in the arrest and detention of minors in the state. Here to guide us through the data and the impact that these detentions are having on children and their communities are EdSource reporters Zadie Stavely and Emma Gallegos. Welcome to Insight.
Thanks for having me.
So there has been a wealth of coverage in response to the Trump administration's immigration enforcement over the last year and a half. As reporters who focus on education in California, when did you decide to hone in on children and immigration enforcement? Emma?
Yeah. So, you know, there had been a few really high profile incidents of children being detained, in some cases deported. One that comes to mind is 5-year-old Liam Conejo Ramos in Minnesota, who had the blue bunny hat. But then there's also been some in California, like Joseph Londano Rodriguez, who was a 6-year-old student who attended California School for the Deaf. And so we wanted to look and see, you know, how many Liams, how many Josephs are being affected by Trump's immigration policies.
Yeah, I mean, Zadie, you profiled a family here in California. Can you just walk us through journalistically how you go about approaching families who are going through something like this to share their story and then to share it, of course, with readers and the broader community?
Well, I always operate with a lot of caution and also just sensitivity. In this case, actually, we were not able to reach the family. They had already been deported. What we chose to do instead was report on this case through the eyes and ears, basically, of the teacher of this child and the classmates. So basically, I was able to get in touch with the teacher of this third grader, who many people have probably actually witnessed in some way her detention, because this was a child who was detained in SFO with her mother in March. The video of their detention was, you know, went viral in part because it was like a surprise detention. And as ICE agents were, basically forcibly handcuffing the mother, both mother and daughter were crying, and there were lots of people around them asking the ICE agents to identify themselves. And so when I was able to reach the teacher, she walked me through, basically she explained to me what it was like to see that video and then realize that the person in the video was actually one of her students and the student's mother.
Mm. And both the mother and the child were deported?
Both the mother and the child were deported. They spent one night in SFO in a holding room and then were flown to McAllen, Texas, booked into a hotel, and then flown to Guatemala the next day. Both of them had an order of removal. Basically, they had been detained first in, I think, 2018 near the border. So Wendy, the child, was not yet 2 at that time. And then they were released and had a series of court dates. They went to some court appointments and not to others. This is very frequent. And I'm not sure if they were able to even get an attorney, or, you know, sometimes court announcements don't actually get to the person. Do they even know when to go to court or where? But they had a final order of removal from 2019. It's not clear whether they knew that they had a final order of removal because they were not present at that mm-hmm. appointment. And so the teacher told me, you know, just about what happened once the classmates found out about this. She wasn't sure if she should talk about this with a class, but then a child came up to her and said, teacher, Ms. Ortega, I'm hearing that Wendy was taken by ICE. And so the teacher then decided to ask the class if others had heard about that, and almost the entire class raised their hand. So then, the district called in social workers and counselors to talk with the children. There was a lot of fear, a lot of anger. There were children who were U.S. citizens who said that they were then afraid to leave their homes, afraid to go to the park, afraid to, go anywhere. And there was also just a lot of grief around this child not being in the classroom anymore.
I mean, when you look at situations on campus when social workers come in, I mean, this is usually at a time of something traumatic has happened. There's grief attached to it. But typically, in recent, I guess until recent years or in the last year and a half, I mean, has it been tied to something like this, like immigration and detention related versus maybe someone passing away, a classmate, and bringing in social workers to help children grieve? I mean, as an education reporter, what stands out to you about how the district is responding in light to a change in enforcement at the federal level?
I think that they responded based on how the children were responding. And so, what the children talked about, they were talking about Wendy as if, she was no longer there, and they were talking in the past tense about her. So, the teacher described it as very much a grief that seemed almost as if it had been a death. And so, in trying to process that, they wrote a poem. There was, like a protest at school, basically because the kids wanted to do something. The teacher described seeing something on the desk of Wendy's desk, where the children had basically created a memorial to her, where they put cards, they put, flowers, basically they put like candy for her. And eventually they tried to send that to her. I don't know if they're even aware if Wendy actually received that in Guatemala, but basically they were trying to find some way of processing in a way. And even she said that even at the end of the year, when she would take attendance, the children would say, "And Wendy isn't here."
Wow. I mean, this is just one example. I mean, in both of your reportings, there's a great deal of data driving what you found. Emma, I mean, how does this example reflect the big changes in administrations and immigration enforcement between the Trump administration and the Biden administration with that look at California?
Yeah, absolutely. Wendy is a great example of how things have changed under the second Trump administration. So, under Biden, what we would see is a lot of children would come to the border. They were known as a lot of them were unaccompanied minors. And what would happen is they would get processed through San Diego. Not many of them were deported. And what's happening under Trump is you're seeing more children who are in ICE detention. They're not coming, at the border. These are students who are in communities, in California communities all across the state, like a Wendy, or I'm based in Bakersfield. And so you're seeing students who are already a part of the community, attending school, being detained in ICE detention, and more of them are being deported as well. So 61% of detained children under the second Trump administration were deported. You compare that to 8% under Biden. And we also see that huge increase, 90% increase in children being detained who are not, it's not at the border. It's in the interior.
Yeah, and you also just have like a very visual interactive map that shows and walks people through, under the last year and a half of the Biden administration compared to the first year and a half of the second Trump administration. And it shows, the detention facilities across the state. But, Emma, it also shows that a lot of these children are actually leaving the state. They're going elsewhere to facilities in Texas and South Texas, correct?
Yes. So under the Biden administration, some of these family detention centers were shut down. There was a lot of, even the Department of Homeland Security had an advisory committee that recommended they be shut down. They said that, detention poses a threat to the health of children. Under the second Trump administration, he reopened some of these facilities. One of those was the South Texas Family Residential Center in Dilley. That's been a very high-profile facility. Liam Conejo Ramos went there, and there were protests there. And so a lot of children in California who are being detained, you can see them being detained, close to where they're apprehended in their own communities all across the state, and then you see a large portion of them are being sent over to the South Texas facility.
Did the Department of Homeland Security respond to your reporting?
Yes, they did. So I got this data from the Deportation Data Project. It's directly from ICE, and the DHS spokesperson said that this data is being cherry-picked by to peddle a false narrative. And said that they're not targeting children. They said parents are asked if they want to be removed with their children, or ICE will place the children with a safe person the parent designates. So they're saying they don't separate families, and that's why they have these family detention facilities.
Given that, I mean, this reporting is driven by data. What stood out to you about the data? I mean, of course, you're getting tips, you're getting information and anecdotes and personal accounts, but what value does data have when pursuing this story?
I really like that we were able to tell this, very human story about what's happening in one classroom in West Contra Costa County with Wendy's classmates and her teacher. The value of the data is that you're understanding just the scale of how often this is happening. Because, like I said in the beginning, there are some of these really high-profile cases, but we found there's more than 650 children in California alone who've been detained. And so there are a lot of Wendy's. And I think that's important for the public to understand about what's happening right now.
And I'd like to add something. I think actually that it's really, really hard. Now I find it harder to find people who want to share these stories. I found some teachers in other parts of California who did not want to share about, they had students who were deported, but they did not want to talk to me about it, in part because of fear that that would somehow open their school up to more, scrutiny, I guess, or attention from ICE. And so I think that the data itself kind of shows us that there are all of these other stories out there, even when we can't necessarily hear every single personal story.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with EdSource reporters Zadie Stavely and Emma Gallegos about a shift in immigration enforcement and the detention of children in California under the Trump administration. When you talk to experts, what have they been sharing about the manner in which deportations and detentions are being conducted under the second Trump administration?
One thing that one person told me, this is her name is Michelle Brené. Actually, a couple of people told me this, but Michelle Brené, who is now, she has an organization called Together and Free. She works with asylum seeking families, but in the past, she was the immigration detention ombudsman under Biden. And so she has, been involved and witnessed family detention over many, many years. But she basically said that, there are some families where they get final orders of removal and there needs to be, the government decides that there needs to be deportation, right? But that in the past, previous administrations had an option that they sometimes used, which was giving families a notice. You're going to be deported on such and such a day. In some cases, they would wait until the end of the school year to do so because to avoid disrupting a child's education in this way. And they would, give them time to sort of wrap up their affairs, like, close their bank accounts or sell their house if they had a house. And what she said people are seeing now is that detentions are happening in a much more often. It always happened in some cases, but in much more often in a way that has no notice. So in a surprise manner. In what we've heard from many students and teachers is that there are children or families showing up to immigration appointments, at court or at USCIS or at ICE, and then being detained there. And so they didn't know, they thought they were complying with what they have to do for their court case, and then they're being detained in that moment. In this other case, Wendy and her mother are in SFO trying to fly to visit a family member in Florida and are detained there because TSA agents, called ICE on them, basically.
Finally, Emma, I mean, and Zadie as well, but you, this is, I would imagine, just kind of the start of reporting. You also have a podcast episode as well. And I mentioned you have like an interactive map. What are the two of you going to be looking for as this continues?
One of the things that we want to do is to look inside detention centers to see, what kind of education children are receiving, but also just continuing to look at how this evolves moving forward. The data will change, obviously, moving forward, and maybe Emma can speak to that as well. I think that things could change. This data is up until March 10th, right, Emma?
Right. Yeah. And the ICE has not been just putting out this information regularly. This deportation data project has actually been suing the government to get it. And so there are periodic drops that come in. And yeah, so we're always looking for the next data drop that'll be more have more up-to-date information. That's a part of it. And there's also we didn't mention that there was one, a 12-year-old, we're not sure their gender, named GS, who was part of a court case called the Flores Settlement Agreement. And so that's another thing that we've been looking at. Some of these children are staying in detention quite a long time. GS in this case was in there for 64 days. And so, as Zadie said, GS mentions in their declaration that they used to study all the time and now they don't really enjoy school. It's not the same. And so looking into why children are in these ICE detention facilities longer and watching this court case as it unfolds and the Trump challenges this agreement that limits the amount of time that children are supposed to be in detention. So, yeah, that's something that we're also going to be looking into.
Zadie and Emma, thank you for taking the time and sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Zadie Stavely and Emma Gallegos are reporters for EdSource, the online publication about education in California. We've been talking about the shift in immigration enforcement and detention of children in California under the Trump administration. We have links to their reporting and the podcast episode on our Insight page. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.